Welcome to The Creative Shift. My name is Dan Blank, author of the book Be the Gateway and founder of WeGrowMedia.com. Today, I'm really excited to be chatting with Jenny Blake. She's been on the podcast in the very distant past, I think. And today, we really sort of dig into the topics that so many creative professionals and entrepreneurs are facing, which is how do you navigate change? How do you navigate uncertainty? Jenny is author of the book Pivot, The Only Move That Matters Is Your Next One. And she has a great phrase in this conversation, which is that we've all been pivoted, whether we like it or not, and each of us are slowly adapting. So in this conversation, we talk about something that she's done that I think is just amazing, which is how she is using creativity to kind of get her through this. She moved her own podcast from weekly, which she said at one point used to be, overwhelming to do a weekly podcast. Now she's moved it to daily. We also dig into how she helps other people pivot and what she's doing to pivot her own business. She said that when everything changed in March, her business was essentially, wiped out. Not entirely, but she does a lot of speaking, a lot of in-person workshops. So everything on the books for that was canceled. And then what she knows is that people who would otherwise normally hire her 3, 6, 12, 24 months out aren't really doing that right now. And they might be slow to do that in general for quite some time. In this, we also talk about the emotional side of what it means to create, to run a business, and to try to kind of be out there on your own, whether you're just an author who's trying to create a little sideline of writing a book and being out there publicly as an author, or if you're someone who's really digging in as I want to start or grow a business. Jenny is a really big advocate of I think what she calls systems thinking, which is this idea of how do you create systems to help you manage the challenges that we all go through and kind of help you lead to your goals? This was a really wonderful, honest conversation. I'm grateful to Jenny for being so open. So here is Jenny Blake. Hey everyone, this is Dan Blank. I'm very excited to be chatting again with Jenny Blake. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Dan. I'm so thrilled to have our various connection points over the years.
Yeah, I was saying as we kind of got on the call that I feel like we've known each other a long time, and it's like in internet years, it feels like decades because you've done so many things online and I have. We've connected here or there, and we've met in New York City and, had lunch together and then all the online connections. And it's so funny how the online journey of how my business has evolved, how your business has evolved, as our mission has evolved. Am I wrong? Does it not feel like, not lifetimes, but sort of like lifetimes, like dog years? I don't know.
Definitely. There's something like blog dog years, I started blogging when it was 2007 when I was regularly posting. It just feels like eons ago. And I didn't look up when you and I first connected, but I want to say that we're approaching a decade of friendship, and yeah. Having met for coffee, I think what early days when I moved to New York, and I've since watched you move, expand your family, pivot your business. You've seen me do the same. And certainly now amidst the pandemic and it feels like definitely multiple lifetimes ago, even though we last spoke.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I mean, something I've been watching from you is that, as everything has been evolving this year, you did something that I think is extraordinary, which is you're so good about sharing content, but a podcast is a big part of what you do. And correct me if I'm wrong, you've sort of moved to daily podcasts or something. Is that right?
I have indeed moved to daily. It started the first pandemic related podcast. I called it Pivoting Around a Pandemic, was on March 11th. And shortly after that, I felt this urge that things are changing so quickly that my last book is called Pivot. The Only Move That Matters Is Your Next One. It was to study how do we get better at navigating change and uncertainty. And things were changing so quickly. And the podcast is my passion project. It's the thing that I love. So when all my speaking work and big corporate work got canceled, this is the thing I just decided to pour my heart and soul and energy into and fumble through it. Because believe me, I know you have a lot of creators in your audience. I feel awkward and imperfect every single day, but it's been a very interesting challenge to hit publish anyway, and to keep going and to have that challenge of, oh my gosh, I have to think of something every day. You know, there's something fascinating about setting the bar so much higher than I ever thought I was capable of, because I used to get overwhelmed at publishing once a week. I couldn't even always hit that.
Totally. And I want to talk about that, because especially in that March 11th, you know, March 13th, that kind of time frame when everything was just changing by the minute, so many people, I know, you know, because, you know, hear them or, you know, saying things like, well, now is not the time, or now I have so many more worries, or we don't know. And I always think it's great when in any moment someone takes the time to raise their voice, and because you also bring other people on, raise the voice of other people. How was that decision making for you? So was it really that you saw other parts of your business shifting and you said, well, I'm just going to double down on the one that I know I control?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. Out of my own desire to understand and process what was going on, and not just through the news media, but actually through a sort of elevated or alternate conversation, that's what really interested me. The first person I brought on is a doctor, Dr. Michael J. Consuelos. So in that case, I wasn't standing up, raising my hand, saying I'm any kind of expert. And in fact, even in those first few episodes, I was very self-conscious and very aware that I don't want to overstep my bounds in terms of what I'm claiming to even talk about. But I was really putting myself in the listener's shoes as a curious person trying to figure out how to handle all this. And because of the nature of my work, so much of it is public speaking and work with companies and travel, I kind of got wiped out early on in the process in terms of my income and my business setup and life as normal. And then compound that with living in New York City, which also quickly became a big hub of activity and where things were spreading quickly. So those two things put me in a position where I felt like I was certainly grappling with a lot of these questions on the early side. And even if I didn't have a single answer, I wanted to be able to ask questions. And also, as you said, curate the guests. So yes, I had a medical professional on for a few, but also my friend and mentor, Penny Pierce, to talk about how coronavirus is speeding us toward transparency and opening the collective Pandora's box. You know, what's that perspective about the frequency of our planet and how the virus is like the stock market, you know, or how virus represents ego and old structures are crumbling and what new structures will we choose in their place? I find that piece of it just as interesting and important to try to, as I said, fumble through, at least on my part, maybe not my guess, as the practical nuts and bolts, like wear a mask, wash your hands.
See, I mean, Pivot has been the centerpiece of your business and platform for a number of years now. And you, I mean, I remember, you know, early on, I think one of the first things we talked about where, you know, your name just kept spreading was you had this spreadsheet. And you have since had many,
it's
many spreadsheets.
A spreadsheet of some kind.
You know, and this is a thing with you. You are someone who is really amazing at creating systems and ways of breaking into process and systems, and, you know, really looking at what would just be called a problem or a challenge and saying, cool, let's make a process around it. And here is a spreadsheet I've created to do that, or here's a resource, here's a way to do that. And I always think of, one, that's awesome that you've always done that and you're such an amazing resource. But two, then you're hit with something like this. And I think, you know, having been in business for a decade, I mean, there's nothing like what we're going through now, but I know that for any business owner, any little corner restaurant in a typical year, not this year, it's like, it's surrounded by all these crises. And even when there's no crisis, it can feel like there's a crisis. It would take so little for a business owner to think, oh my gosh, two towns away, another restaurant open that's like mine, and everyone's talking about them on Facebook, and like that emotional side to it. And I don't know, I guess the first question is, you know, how does that fit into a process of figuring out where you do want to go, whether it's for you or for your clients or from what you do? Because I always feel like that emotional component is such it's like it defines our reality. And too often I worry that people don't recognize it as that. But maybe I'm thinking about it. I mean, I don't know. Do you think about it that way, or have you addressed it that way?
Oh, I love what you just said. And in fact, I'd like to speak to both. You mentioned the spreadsheet piece. So of course, now I feel like, well, how can I go any further without offering your listeners a spreadsheet? So here's an example. We all subscribe to so many things now. And whether you're a consumer, a customer, or a creator, subscription-based businesses are thriving. Because instead of promoting the funnel and the obsession of making one sale, a subscription-based business creates a relationship. There's a great book called Subscribed. What's so interesting is that I was starting to lose track of everything I was subscribed to. So I created a spreadsheet to track all the software I use to run my business. That is at bit.ly/JB recurring services. And I created this for myself, but I quickly realized I bet other people are curious about the software that I have used, sometimes Frankenstrung together, to keep the whole thing running and actually run a pretty agile, lean team and business. So I decided, why not make this public? And that's been my logic since the beginning, Dan. So the fact that you mentioned a spreadsheet, any spreadsheet, yes, I have dozens now. And that's an example of one that when the pandemic started and everybody started tightening the belt and saying, you better look at your credit card statements and figure out what you can cut, and we're going to all go really lean now, if not add in new subscription services for things like meal delivery or streaming services so we can binge watch everything. So all of a sudden I was saying, oh, you need to figure out how to track your subscriptions, or, oh, you want to see what others subscribe? Here's my spreadsheet. And it already existed, but I think everybody should have a spreadsheet where they track the services they subscribe to. And one tab could be for business and one tab is for personal. To me, something like that just makes sense, because it helps us be aware, and why every time you need to cut costs, it shouldn't be a mystery what you're subscribed to. So to me, to have to go look at your credit card statement is like, well, we've already missed a step then in terms of ease and efficiency and documentation.
I mean, I guess I would describe that as like your method is proactive and looking at the credit card statement after you've paid is reactive.
Proactive, and also I don't like inefficiency. So I often share this quote, agile development: each time you repeat a task, take one step toward automating it. So every time I subscribe to something new, it goes directly to the spreadsheet, or I upgrade or downgrade my level of service, because otherwise, how can any of us keep this all in our head now? Our heads, David Allen, getting things done, our brains are not meant to store this type of data. And I'd rather free up my mind to do the big creative strategic thinking. So there's the freebie for this one, is bit.ly/JB recurring services, all lowercase. And the second thing you said is so vital as well, which is that for so many small businesses, there's often a sense of emergency or the sky is falling, even when that's not happening in the rest of the economy. And in 2019, I had a check, a large check that represented a fifth of my revenue for the year, that was, I expected it to come in at a certain day when the work started with a large company. And it got delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed until 4.5 months later, everything in my business was about to collapse. Like, I had this incorrect assumption of when the check, when the invoice was sent and when the money would come in. And it got pushed so far that I basically lost my mind at the end of that journey. So I had to figure out how to stretch 4 months of thinking I would have this big check and not having it. And what am I going to do? And to the point where I certainly almost was, didn't know how I was going to pay the mortgage, didn't know how I was going to pay the team. And it forced me to get so clear on my systems and the tying each role. I don't have any full-time, but part-time team members, tying it to revenue, stepping up, increasing our membership program, or, all these things. And so that cycle, that of learning the hard way, happened from April to August of 2019. And so then in March, when all my income went away at the same time, now that's never happened. I've never had every speaking gig get canceled and then into the future knowing no one's going to book for the rest of the year, pretty much, unless it's virtual. But I had said, you know what? This reminds me of last year, when I had no freaking clue how I was going to pay the bills and how I had to get so creative. And I think that's a muscle and a resource that entrepreneurs and creatives have that we don't even realize, that just that skill of saying, I don't know what's going on, or I'm in a really challenging moment. What can I create? how can I creatively work my way out or solve my way through even this? And that is a skill that not everybody, it's a muscle that not everybody builds, but you, Dan, and your community, that's what we do every day. This is just asking us to go to the black belt level now. If you can make it through this, you can make it through the next set of trials, I think, in an even stronger way.
I love that. That's amazing. And it's funny. It's one of those things that I think a lot of people miss, whether they run a business or they're writing a book or they're an artist or musician, is, I don't know. I mean, I guess someone professionally might call it like a soft skill, but I mean, I think it's like the foundation. And it's that idea of working through issues and being inventive. And I always think of why I always think entrepreneurship is so engaging to me is you're constantly problem solving. You're constantly looking for opportunities. You're constantly having to go through that like inner work of like staying balanced. Like literally before this call, I have a client and they sent me a list of all the things on their plate and they're like feeling a bit overwhelmed. And it was everything from their life. It wasn't just the work they're doing with me. And that's how it is. I feel like when you're on your own. And what I did actually, I created a spreadsheet and sent it back to them. It's really funny. I did that before I talked to you. It's like I was channeling you.
I love it.
But it was just underscoring that point of let's get it all down so that way we can start organizing it. And I even said in the email back of it's my hope this turns into a system. Wow. It's like I really was channeling you. That's incredible. Because then when the left field things happens, it's not, oh my gosh, it's, oh my gosh, now let me put it through my system and we will find a way.
Totally. And that's that systems mindset where instead of just trying to put out the fire right in front of you, what you said to your client, which is actually, let's zoom out even further and let's think about how do we learn from this? How do we grow from this? How do we make this even easier the next time? Because of course we all are dealing with so much every day. Why pile onto that? And sometimes I do think people tell themselves a story. I'm not good at technology, or I'm not good at systems, or I'm not good at software. And it really is just a story. The whole thinking process is what am I learning from this? And what can I create to make it easier the next time, or to build the business or creative streams even in a more robust way. And I think what's so interesting about the time we're in right now is we're all in it together. So yeah. On some level, it's more comforting. Like the crisis that I had last year, I felt alone in it and I felt crazy and I felt kind of mad at myself that I've been in business 9 years. You know, it was 8.5 years at that point. Like, why haven't I figured this out yet? And how was I so stupid to start all this work without the deposit? You know, like I just was kind of going through that narrative. And right now, we're all in it together. So many people are sharing the best that they have and all their resources. And I think that provides some solace. You're not the only one trying to figure this out.
That's a really big point. It's funny. For years, I started We Grow Media in 2010. And at the time, it was sort of the bottom of the recession. And what I'd always felt as I reflected on that was a recession is a great time to start a company because no one was asking like, Dan, how's the business going? Are you killing? Everyone was just, if I was doing anything, they were thrilled. There was such low expectation because at the time, everyone was struggling and trying to find a way. And it just took all that pressure off. It meant that anything I do, I can be proud of and that I'm just going to have to keep working for every little thing. And I do find that when it's sort of like these boom times, you hear nothing but stories of like, this person just discovered the internet. Now they're making $1 million a year. You know, that kind of thing. And you feel like, gosh, I've been on the internet for 20 years and, you know, it's like work.
Right. It's that those are so hard. And I think we all fall into that compare and despair mode. You know, like I've experienced that recently with my podcast. Like it seems, is that always the same level? Even once I produce daily, it's the same core listeners and I'm so grateful for them. And then every new celebrity that launches a podcast, I'm like, how am I going to compete with so-and-so? And now I'm competing with this person.
So I'm curious, and I don't even know if you have enough space to even discuss it. But, you know, it's been interesting watching you grow and evolve your business. Because I remember in the beginning, I think you had Life After College, which was a book and a brand. And then you, to use the lingo, pivoted. And you had, you know, Pivot came out, and that was really big. And you, my memory is you moved from like a Jenny Blake URL to the Pivot URL, and then you kept expanding that. And that was kind of cool, where I kept seeing you double down on this. I was like, wow, she really found her thing, because now she's, and again, this is all from a distance. I might be getting some of it wrong, but you're doing work with corporations, and you've always done speaking. You're doing more of it, and you're getting it into like a curriculum is a big thing. And then you've got momentum in this community, and you've got the podcast, and it all felt, you know, like more and more you were feeling alignment, and you were pulling all these different threads together. Is that at all accurate?
Super accurate. I'm so impressed. Wow. Yes, you nailed it. My first book, Life After College, came out in 2011, and that's when I left Google and went full-time, so not too long after you. And then I quickly realized I don't want to talk about Life After College for the rest of my life or career, and that's where I hit a real wall, and it was the first time I didn't have a paycheck to fund that question, what's next? So you're right that my interim pivot, that I would call it now, looking back, it just felt like fumbling in the dark, was at least to set up a website under my own name, jennyblake.me. I did that for a year and a half. So I kept blogging. I kept public original thinking. That's what I call it. Just think out loud. And I curated these weekend roundups, coffee talk, I called it. But then I also realized that I do not want to run a business based on my name, my image, and me as the brand. And it's funny because this was in 2013. So total influencer culture, a little bit before Instagram and influencership became this whole career path. But I already knew, just having a site under my own name, I became the product in a way. And I did not want that. I didn't want my life, my happiness, my image to be tied up with my work as closely as it became once I pivoted off of Life After College. So part of that inquiry was, what do I add to the world? Like, if I'm not working at Google and I'm not writing about Life After College, who the heck am I? You know, it does this whole existential crisis. And I fumbled for a year. And that's what made me sort of angry. Like, why do I feel so ill-equipped to answer this question, what's next? And that's what sparked the Pivot Method, because I'd been doing career coaching, even at Google, creating global career development programs. So I saw patterns. I saw things that worked and what didn't work and where people, what didn't work and where people were confused, but I had never synthesized it for myself. And that's what became Pivot and the Pivot Method and the book. So when the book first launched,
I just want to note that I love how the problem became the solution. And I guess like, you know, something I tell people a lot is when they're like, Dan, I've got to put my newsletter at my blog. I don't know what to write. And my advice is always, oh my gosh, write about that.
Yeah,
like just start it right Absolutely. There. I don't know what to write, because you're going to go somewhere cool with that. So it's neat at a big level. You were like, why don't I have the next thing? And then that led you to this whole system, this whole thing.
Well, yes, because also the advice is always, what are the problems? What's missing in the world? What are you frustrated about? What are you angry about? And exactly, I tell people, you're patient zero, whatever you're going through. If you can find a new solution through that, you can become a teacher and show people the way, and not to pretend you're the expert when you're not, but to say, I struggled with this. I figured something out that doesn't exist in the market, and let me show you the way, and take it or leave it. I'm never saying mine's the only way, but I certainly think, you know, distilling what's next for me in the Pivot Method into four stages is pretty straightforward compared to, a lot of what I had seen out there. And by the way, the whole Pivot Method is based on what's working. The whole idea of pivoting is you're not starting from scratch. So it was only when I realized I am an author with Life After College. I am an author. I am a speaker. I can't pretend I'm not. And I was trying to pivot too sharply. Like I was going so far into the vast unknown, it wasn't going to pave the way forward. And when I first launched Pivot in fall of 2016, the website was relatively straightforward, and I still had jennyblake.me. So you can see at every turn that you described, I just naturally, you're right, Dan, when you said I doubled down on things. every time a, here's a systems pointer. Every time a client or a company would ask me a question, instead of answering via email, I would put up a new page on my website and send them the link.
Ooh.
So when you see pivotmethod.com as this big built out internet mansion of the company, you know, it happened over the last four years. And I also became very clear and strategic that when Pivot launched, I wanted to have scalable streams of income where I, Jenny, was not the bottleneck for the business. Mm. That has taken me almost a decade to create, but I do feel that I have it now, as you mentioned.
Well, it takes most people half a century. So I think you're ahead of the curve with that. That's like every founder, you know, of a company is that it's so based on them.
Right. And it just, because I am a creative at heart, like I have mood swings. I have energy swings. I have times where I don't want to be on. I'm not one of those people that I can work like a machine and just like all day, every day. And I'm not trying to disparage those. I'm not very good at it. And so I never want to be the bottleneck in my business where when I need to go in a creative cave for 3 months or 6 months, everything grinds to a halt. Or if I were to get sick, you know, I just want to make sure things can keep moving and keep flowing and actually not work 40 to 50 hours a week. I'd rather work 20 hours a week. So I'm always trying to think about how can I earn twice as much in half the time with ease and joy.
Well, that's been kind of neat how, I mean, this is another thing that I always remember, and I think it's accurate, but you really like to travel and to have experiences. And I do remember where you'd be on, I'll call it hiatus, I don't know if you'd call it, but where you would go to, again, I'm making this up, I think like to Bali for 3 months or something. Is that part, am I remembering that correctly too?
Definitely. Although now, I mean, even since we last spoke, I don't know how much of it, but I got married in 2018. We moved to Harlem, bought a place here, and now we have a 6-month-old German Shepherd puppy. So the days of like being gone for 3 months are a little bit in the past, as you know too, Dan, from growing your family. But yeah, I do. But I also travel a lot for work. So even just balancing that.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask about, because this is something where, you know, if I think back to, you know, when Pivot came out, there's so many ways you could have built that, because you'd already successfully built life after college. And you seem to have made a choice here too, where one of your superpowers is that you like to travel, you like speaking. I have to imagine you also like, to some degree, like in-person training. And it seems like that is a big part of how you develop this, is that part of your business is that you would be in person for a portion of the year. Is that correct?
Yeah. And I do really love keynote speaking, and I love traveling. I even love staying in hotels. But what's interesting about having it all be canceled and wiped out is, this is what it's like to stay home. It's the longest I've stayed home in 15 years at one stretch of time. And I don't know, I'm kind of liking it. Like I'm podcasting every day. If I were on the road, and then for me, I just get really tired. That's like packing for a trip, traveling to the location, getting there the day before so I make sure there are no delays that interfere with me showing up on stage, speaking the next day, winding down that night, flying home the following day, unpacking. I mean, really, even if it's a 1-hour keynote or 2 or 3 hour workshop, that takes me the entire week of my focus, of my energy, of my time. And there's no effing way I would have a daily podcast if I were still on that schedule. So I do find it very fascinating to understand what I'm like when I'm not on the road speaking with and for, let's say, clients. And now I'm like, oh, I have this space to sort of hear myself think or create every day in such a different way. So I am grateful actually for this time, even though financially it's a lot more stressful.
So how do you think about that process of pivoting? Because there's so much going on here. There's the idea of you're able to experience something that previously you didn't really enjoy, which is being home at length time. And you're saying, oh, maybe I can reassess the value of this into my life. And then, as you said before, it's not just that work dried up. It's that if you look out to 6 months in the future, I don't know the number, no one's booking, or they might be reticent to book. So even if everything opens up in a certain number of days, there might be a weird gray area for quite a period of time. So how do you even approach something so huge?
Well, I am really excited to facilitate virtually. I love it. I've done it for a long time. This pandemic is not the first thing that had me say, how do I teach on Zoom? You know, like I've been doing it for a while and I love it. And I think that the sessions can actually be every bit as interactive. So I am looking forward to when organizations are ready to come back online a little bit in terms of bringing in outside people like me. I think what topic is more relevant right now than pivoting and trying to figure out what's next and how to be more agile. And in terms of how to think about my own desire, I mean, I guess it just starts with that inquiry, which is what so many of us are facing right now. If I were to build this from scratch, what would I like it to look like? Or not even from scratch, but okay, we've all had this global pause and shelter at home. What are we secretly relieved to have let go of? And what would we want to say yes and no to in the future that that this time might have informed each of us about? So for me, yes, I'll still be so happy to go on the road and do keynotes, but maybe I'm going to raise my rates, especially if there's physical risks, health risks of travel. And maybe I'll say yes to only one a month and at a certain rate and just be more discerning or selective in that way. I don't know. On the other hand, we know as creatives, sometimes it's just, what do they call it? Eat what you kill. It's such a gross, like violent metaphor, but sometimes it's like, okay, there could be five events in a month and then nothing for 4 months. So I'm also aware that I'm always tempted to say yes to a lot at once sometimes because it can go very seasonally and cyclically in this business.
Totally. I always feel like something that you are just exceptional at is it's just connecting with people. You always seem to have had this gift of you just always know interesting people and you connect with interesting people. And you've always, to me, just had this incredible network. It's something I talk to people about a lot. I always, you know, because we talk about, you know, even just for writers developing a platform is like, this really is about your ability to communicate with people and have trust, and that the real way that business works is word of mouth. Do you think that's something that you do, this kind of way of reaching out and making connections with people, is something you try to do, or does that sound shocking and you're like, wow, I don't know how
well,
that happens?
I'm really honored. I'm really grateful for you to say that. I honestly don't know how I have any friends because I am so introverted. Once the pandemic started, I did a podcast episode on digital introverts, like any of us overwhelmed by all the Zooming and video calls. I don't know, Dan. I really don't know because I feel like every year I become more of a curmudgeon, sort of I love alone time. And I guess maybe it's also being married and living with someone. And Michael and I moved in together in 2017. It was the first person I ever lived with, like partner. So just interacting with him means I'm already extroverting half the day. I don't know. Like, I'm not very proactive about initiating things. I'll whether virtually or in person. And then sometimes I feel like I'm not a good friend because I don't even really like texting conversationally. I'm bad at email. So I'm not good at all the small interactions. But of course, when I'm with someone, I love deep, interesting, far-ranging conversations. So I think if anyone's willing to put up with my lack of small interim communication, then we can really get down and dirty and talk about like business, life, relationships. You know, I love walk and talks. Love a good walk and talk.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, if you know, now there's so much more transparency to see how, you know, you used the term before, like influencers like live. And I think there's a lot of people who are like podcasters where they're not quite celebrities, but they are kind of celebrities. And I do get that impression. There are all these people that know each other who are kind of quasi-famous. And they're big and they're busy. So they might not be texting, but they'll be frequent guests on each other's shows or something. And you get a sense that they have infrequent, deep conversations. And it's like a check-in when they come on the podcast. And it feels a bit like what you've described. And I think that that's what it's a bit of like how I do things as well, which is, you know, I love that one-on-one conversations, why I love the podcast. But I'm like you, I'm just sort of too introverted to be super chatty throughout the day with, you know, a million different messages going here or there via text. I mean, email is a lot easier for me because there's that less of a pressure of immediate reciprocation.
And you just described, I love how you described it, these infrequent, deep conversations. That's what I love about podcasting too. And in fact, you and I, it's not like we had a catch-up call prior to this.
This is the catch-up call.
This is the catch-up call. Yeah, I have friends like that, where the only time I speak with them, Cal Newport, for example, I can't even say friend in the true sense of the word, but he's been on my podcast twice. Those are the times that we connect and catch up. And as an introverted person, I would so much rather invite somebody to my podcast than say, you want to catch up? Want to schedule a call? My close friends, I will say, let's hop on the phone. Let's schedule a call. And I mean, close is a small number, but otherwise I'm more than happy. Like, Dan, I'm so glad that we're catching up. We're getting to know what each other is up to, but I love that we're hitting record on this. And podcasts are such engaging long form conversations where you're just roaming around together for half an hour or an hour. And so I love listening to podcasts and I love hosting it because it for me, it is that outlet of deep, interesting, engaging conversation. And I have to say, when I finish a day of podcasts, whether I'm interviewing or being interviewed, well, that's part of the reason that the last thing I want to do is then now make five more phone calls. It's not going to happen. I'm going to go to the park and walk the dog and kind of get into my own head again.
Yeah. So with all the people that you talk to, like in your community or your, you know, your collaborators on the podcast, where are people's heads now? Like, what are you noticing? It can align to pivot or just in general to creativity and business, but like, what are you hearing from people in terms of what they're concerned with or, you know, just where their heads are at with looking forward of, you know, either the challenges they're going through or where you think they might be headed?
That's a great question. And people's circumstances are so different. Yeah. I think that one thing it's important to acknowledge is so many people, if not all of us, have gotten pivoted. Nobody saw this coming. All of us have been affected. No matter if you still have a job, you're self-employed, you're on the front lines. I mean, we've all been asked to shelter at home. We've all been asked to adopt so many different practices about how we move through our day and through the world. So there's still massive uncertainty. We're just getting slowly adapting. And that's why this phrase, the new normal, it's like maybe we're all a little less freaked out today than we were a month ago, but it doesn't mean that we have any freaking clue what's next. What I find interesting is that this is the nature of reality, that to think we know what's next is an illusion anyway. We just sometimes get more confident when our days have been more similar than not. Yeah. And, you know, it's why the subtitle of Pivot is the only move that matters is your next one, because I was debunking the notion that you could have any kind of career plan. What's a plan? What's the saying? God laughs at your plans, you know? Yeah. And David White, what you can plan is too small for you to live. So the question now is, with that nature of reality front and center, how do we keep moving? And what I find so interesting about this time is that it's a day by day thing. And a week by week thing. You cannot really know. Even we've been talking about speak. I have no clue where my income is going to come from. I mean, I have my private Momentum community for solopreneurs, but it doesn't quite cover all the expenses for my household and my team and business services. Yeah, I have no clue where the money's going to come from starting in really June. I mean, sooner than later. Yeah. And so it's this surrender as well, like a surrender to, I don't know yet, but I trust that I will be shown. And also on a practical level, having plan B, C, D, and Z lined up in your head. You don't have to know. Plan A is that I keep going on the strategic path that I was going on. Like I already said, for 2020, I'm not going to take any new one-on-one coaching clients. If I really got into a pinch, I could put out a call to my newsletter and say, I'm opening up 10 spots, but I don't really want to do that. That's not my heart's desire, which is something you mentioned earlier in the conversation. I think just connecting and saying, what is my heart's desire? If I could create anything, plan B might be borrowing, whether it's from the government, from friends, from family, Plan C, for me, I called it coaching, you know, fancy. Plan D, so come up with yours. You can be cute with the letters and what they mean or not. But that is, I think, if I could give a practical path toward the pivot runway during this time, is holding a candle for the highest good for you and all involved. And then in the back of your mind, just to put yourself at ease, some steps you could take if and when, and what's that cutoff date that you really got to move in to some of those backup plans.
You mentioned this idea of you were, you know, not wanting to take new clients because it's not where, you know, your biggest joy comes from. Those aren't your words, but, and that you were trying to figure out what that was. And that I feel like a lot of people have that type of thing, which is they're not satisfied. They're appreciative, but not fully satisfied with whatever work they do. They want something different, but they don't know what it is. Is that for you a matter of just time, you know, knowing that you're open and waiting for it to come? Is it something that you experiment with? Do you collaborate? How do you work through that? Because I think so many people have that. And I think the thing that makes me sad is when they don't engage with a process. They just have that thing and then they don't do anything about it ever. And then they just stay in stuckness.
And do you mean the process around saying, John Maxwell, the quote, say no to the good so you can say yes to the best? Do you mean that? What is the process of how we say no to the good?
Or no, of figuring out, well, what is the best? So if you say, you know what? Because okay. I've heard a lot of people say that word consults, like, oh, client work, I don't know, it's this, that, whatever. And then you're left with, but it pays the bills. And then there's that right. big gap of what's next.
Right. Well, yeah, I'm not a big fan of turning anything off, kind of this all or nothing thinking.
Yeah.
But the answers are always already there. So I think it is looking at of everything that you do, of all the activities that you do in your business or your creative projects, which one is most joyful? I like doing a 2x2 grid of ease and joy, and even sometimes ease, revenue, and joy. So what is that intersection of ease, revenue, and joy? And I would even add impact. So when I say, how can I earn twice as much in half the time with ease and joy? The other thing that I tacked on is while serving the highest good for all involved. With one-on-one coaching, I'll just give an example. It was always my bridge income. For the first 8 years of my business, it was the most steady and one of the biggest streams of income. But in 2019, when I was trying to solve the bigger problems and I was trying to expand the team and kind of go pro a little more and remove myself even more as a bottleneck, I realized that as much as I love my clients, I really love them and I do really enjoy coaching, I couldn't do both anymore. So, and that's the same thing that is how I decided to leave Google. I just simply couldn't juggle trying to build and launch my business while working at Google. I started to reach this point where I couldn't have the space to think strategically about big, like six-figure contract level work mm-hmm. while jumping on and off the phone.
Yeah.
And while feeling guilty, I started to feel really guilty because I'm not good at email and I don't prioritize email. So I knew that if anyone were going to hire me as their coach, I would fail them on that front of the email and in-between communications. And that didn't feel fair to me, to those clients. So you're right that there is this tricky moment of saying no. But the very first times I started to say, the doors are closed, I'm not taking on anyone new and have to say no, it was so hard. And I really worried, like, what if I'm not making the right decision, or even having FOMO of the incredible people I could have been working with and wasn't. Like, oh, what if this was my next dream client and they said no? And then I just reminded myself, it's actually not personal. It's not personal to them and it's not personal to me. These are incredible people and I still do really enjoy coaching, but I needed the space. And I told myself, I can always add it back in, but I need to give myself a chance to get this other thing off the ground, a fair chance. This other thing in my case is licensing. But for anybody listening, whatever it is that is sparking the most joy at the most ease and the most revenue for you, then it's like, how do you create the space around that? And what tough thing do you need to say no to, even if not forever, for a certain period of time, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months?
The thing I always think about with this, with the whole idea of, you know, career development, you know, pivoting their career is, I don't know. I mean, I worked in corporate for a long time. I also worked in a lot of startups. And I feel like there's, you know, some people, maybe a lot of people, maybe most people, where they got into a career and they got into a company and they got into a job and they just stayed there. And they stayed there for good reasons. It paid the bills. It was somewhere to go. It was a title. It was people they knew. It was work they got better and better at. And then they just truly get stuck in that they don't like the job. They don't like the company. They don't like the work. But they're so deep into it that to think about a change, it feels like putting dynamite in the middle of your life. And of your career and of your income and of however you view your role of supporting your family or paying a mortgage. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like, you know, do you come in contact with that, you know, or how do you even talk about that? That idea that there are some people, people who really feel stuck in where they're at, but also feel like they can't even talk about another way, because to do so is somehow blowing up what they've built, and maybe other people, you know, how other people they support other people.
It is such a tough spot to be in, and I think it's going to depend on each different individual and the not just risk tolerance, but risk ability, if you will. Mm. So if you're the breadwinner and you're supporting a family of four kids and a dog and a mortgage, I mean, yeah, you might need to develop something in parallel and not just blow up everything and then start fresh. Although I always say that with a caveat that sometimes people feel in their gut that this is what I need to do and I need to take that bold step and I need to blow everything up and burn the boats. And if your gut is telling you that, follow it. I've never, ever gone wrong from following my intuition. Period, end of story. And in fact, it's the only way I make decisions and can run my business now is through intuition and asking to be shown the next steps. And so it depends. So if you feel that urgency in your gut, you gotta listen. And we see stories like that in the media and just well, friends and family, where it's that bold, courageous move. Okay, barring that incredible clarity, then I like to really look at experiments. And in the pivot method, this is the third stage called pilot. None of us can know the answers about what's the right thing to do. So how can you reduce risk by lining up one or more experiments that will help you test this new direction? And we're talking about two different things here. We're talking about the functional aspects of moving in this new direction without sort of blowing everything up in a way that's detrimental to you or your business. And we're also talking about the pressure from friends and family perhaps not to do this thing. And you got to separate the two. So if you are even energetically waiting for permission from your family or the people around you to go in this new direction, they sense that confusion. It's weird. It's like they can sense that and then they will voice your biggest fears and they will act as fear incarnate in your life. You know, at least this has been the experience that I've observed. Whereas if you're clear, if you say, I know that it's time to move in this new direction, I'm not asking for your permission. I'm just telling you this is what's happening. And then you focus on the pilots, small experiments. You don't know which of your experiments is going to take off, but they will start to show you. So sometimes like with Pivot, when the book launched, I had no clue, Dan, of all the streams of income. We've talked about some of them in this conversation. I actually didn't know what was going to take off. At the end of the book, I said ways companies could work with me. There were options that I thought would sell like gangbusters and didn't make a single sale. And then there were things like licensing that completely surprised me. But I at least knew enough to set up the structure or the container of experiments to see, like putting out different fishing lines,
yeah,
you know, which one's going to catch a fish. And then I invested more and more to build out those programs over time based on the interest I was receiving.
Love that. Is there anything we've talked about a lot, but is there anything I haven't asked about that we should talk about, whether it's about your career or what you're going through, what you're seeing, or even kind of common things, you know, anything?
Well, maybe you've already talked about this on your podcast, but I'm curious how you're pivoting during this time. And if there's anything that has fallen away during this that you actually, like, I'm curious what new permissions are emerging for you or how you might do things differently as we continue to work through this time.
It's a really interesting question because I feel like I'm a unique case in some ways. You know, my wife and I have made some really polarizing decisions about how we want to live. So, you know, I can say this in a really funny way, but, you know, I'm an introvert, I'm a germaphobe, I'm scared to fly. And that has, you know, embracing that has allowed me to make a lot of decisions about being really close to family. You know, the real answer with that is, you know, a decade ago, I did this thing that I actually write about in one of my books called Clarity Cards, where I did this little pyramid of what I want for life, what's important. And, you know, I kind of put, you know, I want to be home with family at the top. And I kind of put all these things out there. And that defined how we live. So that meant that as I developed We Grow Media, I used to do a lot of speaking, and I love speaking. But like you said, I noticed I was really drained by travel and by stuff like that, or not even big travel because I don't fly, but even local travel. I noticed that corporate work required a lot of in-person. So I kept evolving my business year after year to the Clarity Cards because I wanted to be home with my wife and with my kids. And that meant I had to give up a lot of really great revenue streams like corporate work or like speaking or other related things. And it meant I kept doubling down on, I guess, what someone would call virtual work, which is like more one-on-one or more online programs. And what I noticed too is that I loved working with individuals, meaning if I'm working with a writer, that writer shows up to that work because they love it. And you don't always get that when you're doing corporate work. You know, yeah, maybe the head of HR loves it, but the person you're coordinating with, they kind of like it, but they don't love it. So it always really infused me. So as all of this has come about, I've seen some cartoons joking about, you know, it's like, oh, when they call the way that you live normally, quote unquote, quarantine. In an odd way, my life was really well set up for never leaving the house. So it's been a little interesting to go through this and see how little has changed in the last 8 weeks for me, where I have a private studio I've not been to in about 2 months, and that's made me a little sad, but I have a home office. I've always had a home office. This home office was 100% up and running with a door and a lock on it. We were always close to home, and that hasn't changed. All of my work was quote unquote virtual. So I'd already been spending 10 years exploring that. And the other things I do, like you, I have like a weekly podcast, I have a weekly newsletter, and those are my creative outlets. I think the biggest shock, and this is the lamest, weirdest answer I'm looking at, is how little is changing for me. And that is surprising to me because, like everyone else, I wake up every day amazed at the incredibly powerful ways the world is shifting.
And I think it's so interesting for you, someone like you, and I can relate on the piece of working from home for 9 years, you know, like that just didn't impact me. And Michael and I both work from home, and we always have in the whole time we've lived together. So we're also used to being around each other all day. So it's interesting to pull out skills that you have been building probably without even realizing it. The skill of working from home, the skill of virtual facilitation, the skill of being a germaphobe. I know that's weird to say, but it's actually, I was thinking about it. Like, my friends who are germaphobes have a big advantage because they already do all these personal hygiene practices that the rest of us are having to catch up with. And you probably already own hand sanitizer. I did not.
Yeah, I will say that we do. But it's a good point. And this loops back around to something we were talking about earlier about the skills that you build as a creative or as an entrepreneur or solopreneur. Those are skills that last you through many, many businesses or many phases of life or many creative projects. So it is kind of interesting to look at it from that perspective.
What I find so interesting is hearing conversations, even like this one. I'm just fascinated by who's doing what and how. And how are they thinking? I don't expect anybody to have the answers, but I'm so fascinated to know, how have you been impacted and how are you just wrapping your mind around what to do and how to create, and even the conversations that you're having, Dan, around this time, and like kind of all helping each other through it, but from these different vantage points. And it is really, I think what I'm grateful for is the collective problem solving that seems to be happening at a scale that we've never seen before.
Love that. Jenny, thank you so much for coming on and chatting and kind of taking us inside what you're going through. It really means a lot to me. I think, as you know, I have so much admiration for what you do and how you do it. So I just want to say thank you.
Well, likewise, I feel the exact same way, Dan, and I'm so grateful for our friendship over the years. And especially now, when you reached out to talk now during this time with everything happening, I was so thankful. And I'm a big admirer of everything you do, too. So thanks again for having me and for all these great questions and for everybody for listening.
You can find Jenny Blake at pivotmethod.com. You can find her book, Pivot, The Only Move That Matters Is Your Next One, wherever books are sold. And on Twitter, she is Jenny with a Y underscore Blake. So Jenny underscore Blake. My name again is Dan Blank. You can find me on social media at Dan Blank or on my website, wegrowmedia.com. Thank you so much for listening until the end.